What would you do if you could sit down and have access to 100 women all in leadership roles? What would you want to know? What would you ask them? What lessons would you want to learn? Well, today I sit down with Laura Johnson, the founder of Striven, who has done exactly that. Get ready to be incredibly inspired, to take away some actionable steps that you can implement into your career and into your life to really accelerate. I'm really excited to bring you this honest, vulnerable, and inspiring conversation today. So I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. And as always, I want to hear from you. So make sure you reach out to me on LinkedIn. Let me know your biggest takeaway and what you're going to implement into your career after listening to this conversation. Enjoy. Laura, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. It is an honor to have you here today. I've loved your work. I think it's really important work, and I know we're going to have a really good conversation today. You have your book out, Women in Leadership, 100 Stories That I Think We Can All Learn From. So before we dive into female leadership, what women can do to advance and get ahead, can we talk a little about yourself, your own career journey, and I guess also what you got you so passionate about women empowerment, about women in leadership? So Laura, over to you.
Yeah, I was thinking about this question earlier and it's a difficult one, but if I go back, so I accidentally did management and marketing at uni. And if I think about my first few career moves, they were all accidental as well. But I think there's some probably big lessons in that that you reflect on later. But I was going to do ancient history at uni because that's what I loved. But I didn't do particularly well in my A-levels. So I ended up going through clearing in the UK. So for anyone that's not from the UK, clearing is all the places left that no one wanted. And I picked my university and course based on a decision on a Friday, and I went to university on the Monday. So my parents obviously loved that decision, where I was like, guys, we're going to have to pack, we're off. And loved it, ended up loving that course. I did love business studies at A-level. So I think it probably made a lot of sense. And then I was really lucky. So graduated in 2009, which again, anyone from the UK knows that was a terrible time to graduate because we were in recession. So there weren't many graduate jobs around, but I landed a 3-month role in as a marketing kind of admin role in Jersey. So I thought, oh, I'll go and spend my summer doing that. Why not? And then work out what happens after that. But that 3-month gig turned into about 3.5 years, I think, in the end. It was for a tech business, B2B, which I've kind of stuck with accidentally again. But my manager's manager left, and then my manager left. So I ended up in charge of the marketing department at 21. I kind of just rolled with it. I had a really, really great leadership team. And actually the managing director of that business ended up moving to Jersey Post, and I ended up moving with him. And Jersey Post will forever be one of my favorite roles. We had an incredible CEO there who was going through a huge change and transformation program at the time, which early in my 20s, obviously didn't appreciate. But I look back now and think about all the things he did and how he made everyone feel included. And it really was incredible. And no matter what your role was, you had to deliver post for a week a year. And that was my favorite week because we basically got to go make friends with all the dogs and take dog treats out and go meet people. but it was, there were lots of really amazing lessons from that. Lots of huge lessons in empathy, and just, you know, met the most incredible people that really wanted to make a difference and were really community driven. But then obviously mid-20s, I was like, oh, I want a big career. I'm going to have to move to London. Like, Jersey's not going to cut it. Moved to London and hated living in London, to be honest. So I lasted about 18 months, I think. Love London for a weekend, but going from living on the beach to the Northern Line every day, just like, it did not cut it. I think I was very spoiled in my younger career that I had a good life. Well, I wouldn't say work-life balance, but I think when I wasn't working, I could be at the beach. And the Northern Line slowly killed my soul. So I decided to take a year to go traveling. So had Hong Kong, Fiji, Australia, and then I had a job in Costa Rica, and the plan was to go and learn Spanish and surf. Never got any further than Sydney. So got here, loved it, changed my LinkedIn profile, and got a call about a job. Had an interview on the Tuesday, started on the Thursday. I'm still here nearly 9 years later. And that's why I look at it sometimes. And so much of that was purely accidental and just because I said yes and I'd work it out later. But I don't think when I was in my 20s, I thought that through. But I think I look back at it now and I'm glad I took those risks and I didn't overthink it. But I think within all of those roles, they were all marketing. Most of them were B2B. And that's why I ended up here. But I ended up working for a startup and then just fell in love with startup life. And I guess moving to Striving, I think a lot of what came out of startup life was I took a role here. I was employee number 10. And then very quickly, the business was 100 people. And it went from me in marketing to a team of 15. And honestly, I didn't have many answers on that journey, right? It was really just like everyone's mucking in and I'm working it out. But I had this kind of group of other B2B marketers. So I made anybody else that worked in HR tech and marketing be friends with me. And then I made them be friends with each other. And we had a Slack group where we all kind of started sharing learnings. And it was really that realization of how much easier it was when you had people to talk to about what you were going through. And the fact that most of us were struggling with really similar things. And how we could help each other out. At the same time as that, I got accepted onto something called the Marketing Academy, which take 30 people a year on a scholarship. And they basically threw in a group of 30 other marketers. And it's just a leadership course. So they really do kind of, you do a week's boot camp with something called the Living Leader, where you kind of dive really into history. And it's a bit like therapy in a group setting. And then you get coaches and mentors. And I think between those two things of me finding some community and getting incredible mentors and coaches, I really watched how much easier life became, how much happier I was, but how much more I could take on. And my career really kind of flourished from there. After about 5 years at that startup, I took another role at another startup as general manager and CMO. So they were opening up in Australia. Hired 8 people very quickly. And then found out that the funding and product really wasn't what I'd got told it was. So I restructured the business, made 2 of us redundant. And that was about 2 weeks before the word COVID got mentioned. Mm. so I had these really big plans of like, I'm going to go traveling again. It's going to be great. 3 months off. And then I'll work it out. And then very quickly, the world shut down. I remember like staring at my good friend and housemate at the time, just being like, what do I do? I'm used to working 12-hour days. And now I'm just going to stare at you all day long. So I threw myself at anybody that needed help. So anybody that had like an events business or business that had been impacted, I was like, just tell me what you need and I'll do it. And that led me to the Antler program. In the end, somebody said, oh, why don't you do this? And I thought, yeah, 10 weeks hanging out with really smart people. How often do you get that chance in your career? So went in with the idea of how do we create a better ecosystem around startups? So again, lessons from mine in terms of like, how do we build community? How do we make sure we're not making the same mistakes? How do we each like help each other level up? And after 10 weeks of kind of pulling that apart and trying different things and talking to much smarter people than me, ended up with a very basic idea of what Striving would be. So I always say Striving was a COVID accident because I don't know if I'd ever been brave enough to have taken a leap of faith to start your own business. I think it takes a lot to do it. And I think if it wasn't for COVID and making those decisions, I probably wouldn't be where I am now. So that was kind of 3 and a bit years ago. And up until recently, I've been doing Striving part-time and then some fractional CMO work to pay the bills because unfortunately startup life is way more expensive than I ever realized, despite what everyone told me. I was like, it'll be fine. I've got this. I don't. Like, I spent a fortune. but it's been worth it.
That's quite the story. And I was sat there and I was smiling and I want to come on to Striving now because I love what you're doing over there and I want to find out more about it. But there's a few sort of key takeaways when I was listening then. One, you said yes. And obviously from the UK myself as well. So I think like when you were speaking about the Northern Line in London, I was smiling to myself because I was like, yeah, I totally get that. I never actually worked in London, but I spent enough time in London to know that that's not where I wanted to live. I didn't want to get sucked into that hustle and grind culture and literally live payslip to payslip just to try and climb the corporate ladder. I was like, that's just not the life I want. Went traveling a bit like yourself, again, said yes, and came to Australia. And I guess the rest is history. This country, the people, the opportunities here are far greater in my opinion and from my own experiences than what I would have got offered in the UK. And I am very, very grateful for Australia, the people in Australia. I feel like it's such a fantastic country. Another piece that you talked about is about the coaching and the mentoring piece. I think that, like yourself, had I not invested in my own personal growth, surrounded myself with the right people who are a lot smarter than me as well, right? Because I don't know everything. I'm still learning so much from smarter people. Absolutely key. And you also mentioned about the importance of those good leaders that you've learned from over the course of your career that probably really shaped you when you really look back and go, wow, I learned a lot from that person. So many sort of career sort of like highlights there that have really shaped who you are today. But I'd love to really go into Striver now. What, like, and again, so many amazing things came out of COVID, and I always like to focus on the positives, right? And a lot of people that I know started businesses during COVID and had side hustles and have really actually checked in with themselves to think, what's actually important to me? What do I want? What kind of life do I want to create? So Striver obviously came out of that, which is really positive. But what is the business, and what are your sort of hopes and dreams with it? What do you want to achieve with it?
Yeah, so I'll start there maybe. So we always started with the mission that we wanted to empower people to manage their own careers. So I think a lot of us sit in businesses and we're kind of almost waiting for answers, and not in a bad way. I think that's probably just what we got taught at school, right? But if we're not lucky enough to have great managers and great leaders or a great HR department that actually cares about our career growth, I think a lot of us can be really stagnant. And to your point, I've had a lot of incredible leaders. I've had some truly terrible leaders as well. And I think I've probably learned more from those than the good ones in some respects, because you really work out what you don't want and who you don't want to be. But I think it was really around, how do we enable people to manage it? And I think some of that comes out of COVID as well, where a lot of us were kind of left to our own devices a little bit more. We suddenly had all this time, but also the increasing gig workers as well. Like, there's lots of more people that are deciding to forge their own paths. So how do you help those people? And then I think it was also really targeted, or for me, around that kind of smaller size of business, because one of the things, to your point, Australia is incredible, but most of the Australian economy is small businesses. So the likelihood is you've got hundreds and thousands of people that don't have anybody to help them with that, so might not know what to do. And to me, that just screams at this huge untapped potential. And we talk about skills gaps all the time, but I don't know if we're really investing in the skills and the people that we've got, and how can we kind of double down. So that was really where kind of mission, and I hope that's where we end up. And I hope that's where we're kind of doing a small part to play. I guess where we are, I spent a lot of money and time building a really light MVP of a tech product, which I wish I'd never done. So we can go into that and lessons learned at some point. But we really focused on building a community within HR, talent acquisition, and people and culture. Because again, during COVID, those guys saw the greatest rate of change, because they were trying to work out how the rest of us worked from home and how to hire and retain talent during that time. So started there, we've built community there, really focused a lot on events, group mentoring. We haven't launched a coaching side of the platform yet, but we have been doing some coaching courses. So there's still lots of work to do, but we learned so much from that. And then we've more recently opened up for marketers, and then customer success and sales. The hypothesis for all of that was we'd probably go sort of like emerging leaders level. So maybe people that are 5-8 years into their career that are either looking to step up, or they've just taken that first leadership role and gone like, oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And we can help on that. It's actually skewed a lot older than that. And I don't know whether that's ended up being my network and then that's the initial people, or whether, again, because of COVID, so many of us came out questioning our leadership and purpose and life. And we asked ourselves these big life questions that we probably weren't pre that. But it's been a really great journey. There's loads still to do. We're still really light on tech. And I think for the next 12 months, we've kind of made the decision that we're going to spend a lot more time building community and do event-driven work than tech. And then we're going to go back to that, because I think people are still really craving connection and really craving kind of that peer-to-peer network more than they are. You know, they want one answer in tech. So that's the plan for the next kind of 12 months or so.
Amazing. It's... I think you'll know this, but I also co-founded Sisterhood Club, which is basically a women in tech initiative, because I recruited in technology for over 10 years now, and I saw massive gaps in tech. There's a lot more, it's very male heavy, and there's not enough females coming through. Tech is the future. So I created a Sisterhood Club to sort of, again, like you said, people are craving community and connection and a safe network where they can come to feel seen, be valued and heard as well, and learn from other women, which is why I absolutely love your book that you've put together. So absolutely congrats on that. I can imagine that must have taken you a lot of work. So can we talk about that? Because where I think you and I have probably identified the gap as well is that women in leadership piece, right? I think there's a lot of and people in general that want to take the next step in their careers, want to step up into a leadership role, or maybe they're in a leadership role and they're really struggling because they don't have the support in the business right now, which is why coaching and mentoring is so important. So from those 100 stories in that book, what have been some sort of like key standouts, lessons learnt from going through that process of writing that book and learning from these amazing women?
I think there's probably a couple. And if we go back to kind of starting to do the book, so we're a really small team, as I touched on, like I was only part-time, and then we've got a couple of other fractional people. So usually when I have these ideas and I tell the team, they're like, you don't have time and you don't have the money to do that. Nice idea, not for now. And I really thought it was going to be one of those ideas, but instead they were like, let's do it. And it was the first time that I got a resounding yes, and I didn't have to try and convince somebody or give up and just be like, okay, I'll try again next week. And then I reached out to 100 women that I didn't know, and I deliberately did it to people I didn't know because I thought if I ask my friends, they'll all say yes, because I was like, yeah, of course, great, I do. And out of the 100 people I didn't know that I messaged, 84 of them came back and said, yeah, we'll do it. Now, obviously not all of those did, but it, to me, that was the first test to be like, okay, people want to contribute, and B, this is something that people want, because you don't get that response from cold outreach, as any marketer listening will know. So I think that was the first kind of big lesson, was it was something that I think people want to. I think the other thing that came out of the outreach was the amount of women that came back to me and said that no one had ever asked them before. And that was just the other one. I just feel like, why aren't people asking them? Like, they are, everybody in that book and everyone I asked is an incredible leader. You know, we did it based on, you know, 10 years leadership experience, tend to be smaller businesses. They've all got incredible stories that we can learn from. So I think it's just such a shame that we're not doing that enough. And then I think lessons from the book, obviously trying to get 100 people, and we did it within 3 months, which honestly I was just never do again in terms of timeline. But 100 people, and honestly, they were all incredible. I think the big things that came out of the lessons learned when we were reading it all is 100 stories, and no two stories are the same. And I think that's something we probably all need to know, because I think we question ourselves a lot around, are we making the right choices? And, you know, is this the right next step? And there's 100 different ways, you know, to get to the same spot. And you've got people in very similar positions that have, you know, there's nothing in common in terms of their background to how they got to where they are. I think in terms of things that were common in the book that made me laugh is no one had the same answer to what work-life balance was, which I just thought was brilliant. Because I think, again, it shows like we talk about these mythical things and it just means something different for everybody. Pretty much everybody brought up the value of the community at some point. So either they found the people or they had somebody really early on in their career that advocated for them and what a difference that made. And then I think the other thing we found was the amount of people that talked about imposter syndrome and not backing themselves enough. And I think, again, that's not totally gender skewed, but I do think it happens a lot more to women than men. Except really, I run a podcast. We haven't done it recently, but that's where we started with Striving. And I think we're about 80 episodes in, and I had this realization at one moment that every time we ask people, or if we ask guys, what's the key to the success of their career, they'll all tell you their confidence. And if you ask women around like what's held them back in their careers, they'll all say confidence. And it was one of those kind of light bulb moments of like, okay, yeah, there's something here we should dive into a little bit more. So yeah, I think there was so much from the book, but I think resoundingly, there's just lots of wonderful people out there that people want to help. And I think most people in leadership positions want to give back because somebody backed them early in their career. So they want to be able to do the same. But to your point, if you're in a smaller business, you might not have the people in the business to do that. So again, how can we create that kind of ecosystem or community to allow that?
Amazing. And there's a reason why I call this podcast Career Confidence, because I totally agree. I think that a lot of we can say, oh, it's easy to say yes, but it actually takes a lot of self-belief and confidence to say yes. And I think people wait for permission, or they wait, when I feel confident, I'm going to do that hard thing. I'm going to go on that podcast. I'm going to speak at that event. I'm going to put my hand up in a meeting, when actually the first thing is courage. You need the courage to step out of your comfort zone. And from the courage comes the confidence, because then you sort of stack the evidence that I can do this. I can, you know, I can do tough things. I can push myself out of my comfort zone. I also think a lot of women as well have been programmed to like really be fearful as well, of like fearful of what people will think, judgment, guilt, all of these things that just do not serve us. And it seems to be more apparent in females than it does men. Like, and even in like, I guess in your own life, Laura, like when you sort of reflect on your own sort of story and times, like when have you had to really push yourself out of your comfort zone, and how have you actually gone about building your own confidence? Because I think there's so much to learn from every single person's journey of how we've gone about building our confidence.
I think it's probably something I'm still working on. I think I touched on it before we started this. Like, I hate being this side of the camera. I'm really comfortable the other side on my own least favorite topic. And it takes a lot to kind of put myself out there still. But I think it goes back to that kind of exactly what you're saying before. Like, if putting yourself out there helps to push the mission of what your business is doing or push what you do, like, I think it's about thinking about the bigger purpose rather than thinking about you. I really try on the whole done is better than perfect. And I've really struggled with that since having a startup. and it is. And I also love the whole build in public approach, which I guess I really wish I'd known about earlier in my career, and really just putting it out there and taking people on, because people want to come on the journey, particularly if you're doing something purpose-driven. And just putting it out there and telling people what you learn is so helpful. The amount of anytime I've put anything on LinkedIn around like lessons I've learned or things I've messed up this week, you end up having the best conversations off those. But I think confidence is still something that I really have to work on, and you still struggle with imposter syndrome. I think just in terms of more practical stuff, I do work with a coach, and that's been amazing, and she's incredible. But I think just having that time each month to sit and work on you, it's so tough in any role because you're always busy, right? But I think particularly when you're running your own business, because you expect yourself to have all the answers to all the things. So it's not just answers in marketing, right? You've also the finance person and the tech person and the product person and everything else. And I think if you sit in your own head too long about that, you can kind of undo yourself, or I definitely have. I've overthought so much that I've done nothing. So working with a coach to just kind of dig into that has been really helpful too.
Yeah. And look, I've obviously gone on my own entrepreneurial journey. It's been quite the journey as well. But there's been loads of lessons learned and mistakes made. But I think that the biggest growth has come from starting a business. So what has been, like, if you sort of reflect back, just a few sort of key lessons that you, if you were sort of like coaching your younger self, you'd be like, look, Laura, let's just sit down and make sure we can avoid this, or, you know, make sure that you do more of this. Like, have there been any sort of key lessons that you could impart on your younger self?
Yeah, there's several. We could probably do an entire conversation on that. But but I think the main ones would be like the done is better than perfect. Like, honestly, if I wish I look back now at the first kind of 18 months, I was desperately trying to build this perfect platform on no money. And I am not a product manager. If I'd have just spent my time building community, like, we'd be so much further ahead, and I would have slept a lot more and I probably aged better. You know, it would have been, I think that's a huge one. We, you know, the strive for perfectionism. And again, I think that's a little bit gendered. And I think actually just getting it out there is one. I think the other one is to back myself earlier. Again, like, that kind of worrying what people will think. I don't want to put myself out on LinkedIn too much. I don't want to be too honest. You know, you don't want to be too honest in case, you know, it puts off investors or whatever. There's always a reason not to do something. And I do wish that I'd backed myself, or I wish I'd backed myself more and just put stuff out there. And that's something I think I'll probably still be working on for a while, but I wish I'd, worked out a bit earlier, because I could have saved myself some time and money there too. And then I think the other one is just like value of community. And I think I go back to it, like, people do want you to succeed. Like, genuinely, I've met so many incredible people over the last few years and formed some really amazing friendships. And it's all people going around that end up being values driven and want the same things you do. And maybe we're going about it in different ways, but the values are there and people want to help. And then having people in within that community, like having people to talk about it. To your point, right? Like, you'll never learn more lessons, I don't think, than having your own business. But sometimes it's really nice to tell people when it's a bit of a shit show or you're having a really bad week and know that it's not just you. But also to celebrate the little wins, because sometimes you don't celebrate the little wins because you're too busy focused on everything else. So the other one as well, I think, and my coach will hate me for saying this, so we might not send her this. I've always said that I'm not the smartest, but I'll work the hardest. And I have to reframe that. But I think there's something in that. Like, I will keep working. And you have to know when to take time out. And that is something I still struggle with. Because, again, as a business owner, your to-do list never gets any smaller. But I actually, do you know what? I was the same in marketing, my to-do list never got any smaller either. But the best thing you can do most of the time is actually walk away and take some time out. I think younger me would have benefited from that too.
I'm smiling because this has been a really big lesson for me as well. And it's really funny because I think, again, going back to female entrepreneurs, I think, like, looking back on my younger years, I had something to prove to myself, but I think also to others as well, for the school bullies that said that I wasn't going to do anything, to my parents, to my family, like to friends. Like, it came from a place of insecurity, right, in my younger years. Now, having worked on myself a lot, not seeking external validation, doing it because I'm very purpose-led, mission-driven, as opposed to just trying to fill a hole and validate something inside of me that's, you know, got a void. I can now take time off without the guilt. I can not open my emails when I'm away with my husband, or I can just not check my emails past a certain time because I've got my boundaries in place. But that has been a huge journey for me personally, building this business. And the biggest thing that I've personally worked on is that sort of inner, I guess, silencing my inner critic and making sure that everything I do is aligned with my values and is making me feel good, as opposed to what looks good externally. And it's been a huge journey, but it's one that I encourage everyone to go on, because when you are building something or putting yourself out there, you're opening yourself up to all sorts of opinions and criticism. And if you listen to that, you're going to be stopped in your tracks. Whereas if you're coming from a place of, I know who I am and I know that what I want to achieve, and some people are going to like this, some people aren't, and that's okay. And it's just a different perspective and a different approach. But I think every single person that's tried to achieve anything in life has probably overworked and done things maybe for the wrong reason to begin with. And then, but that's just a whole journey of learning. And I think it comes from wisdom as well.
Yeah.
But I just love to go back to your book. And I would encourage every single one of my listeners to go and purchase that, because I know there'll be so many incredible things in this book. But you did mention there are some patterns about imposter syndrome. Everyone's journey is different, but was there any particular story? Because there is a lack of women in leadership roles. I just actually hosted a Sisterhood Club event a few weeks back now, and the amount of women in the room that were struggling to take the next step and didn't know how to get to the next step. When you were sort of hearing from all of these senior women, has there been any sort of like tough journeys that they've gone on, or anything they've had to personally overcome to get to where they are today? Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
I think there was one week where, so every day we were kind of getting different submissions in. And I think there was one week where within a week, somebody talked about that they'd lost their husband to cancer was one day. And the next day was somebody lost their brother. And then I think there was someone after that they'd ended up in hospital for months on end. So you had all these like huge personal situations that people had overcome. They talked about that. You just don't know what anybody's going through and the things that you've overcome. But every single one that said they went through these awful and these tragedies talked about how much stronger they came out the other side. And that's not to say, you know, I don't want anyone to have to go through that. But I think it was around that. I don't want to use resilience because it's overused, but that kind of, you know, appreciating what you've got, making the most of what you've got. And kind of almost like we were saying before, like that reframe now and again, right? And it's, you don't want to get into toxic positivity, but it's around using what you've got. So I think that was one of the big things that I think, like, one, the lesson of you really don't know what people are going through at home. And two, just, you know, that resilience and overcoming things, and probably goes to your point as well about the work you do on yourself and how that shows up elsewhere. And then I think with it, the other one that I found really interesting was we asked a question around how people have been supported in work. And I can't remember how we phrased it, but it was this really 50-50 split on people that had found men in their career that from their early days had really championed them, and they'd be the ones to prop them up and give them, like, push them to go for promotions, and those that had the direct opposite experience in work. And I think that probably goes back to some of those stuff you're saying around, you know, sometimes what happens is it really is about who you're surrounded by. And I think that's why that sponsorship piece is so important at work, but it's difficult in small businesses, because if you've got someone there that's going to cheerlead you and push you forward and be the one to be like, hey, why haven't you put your hand up? Or why are you doubting yourself about that? Then I think that can have a huge impact if you're lucky enough to have that person. But I think to a point, like, how do we create that for those people that maybe aren't lucky enough to have that in their roles? And how can we give them the cheerleaders to help them push themselves forward? And I think that's one of the things that we want to try and work out, kind of where we can help and where we fit in that bigger piece, so more people are happy to put their hand up. I think the other big learning that's come out of it is just around the return to work piece for particularly mums after maternity leave. I don't have kids, so I've never experienced it. But I think talking to some people about their experiences, and I've got two friends recently that have been made redundant whilst on maternity leave, I just think it's so hard. And there's so much more that we could be doing for women within business to make that return feel possible. But also that when you return, it doesn't have to feel like you're treading water, and that you still have options and you can still put your hand up and you can still be in leadership. Because I do think there's a huge, huge gap there that I don't very ignorantly didn't properly understand, I don't think, until I spoke to all these people and all these stories came out.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've got a few stories, but I know Pam won't mind me sharing this, but she came back from, Pam's my business partner as well, and she came back from maternity leave. And this is actually part of the reason why we started our own business. And she came back, her role completely changed. She had built up her desk in recruitment where she had a, you know, she was working, looking after like business analysts and project managers. Our boss said, no, someone else is doing that now. So she literally had to come back 5 days a week. There was no flex. And on top of that, her whole role had changed. So she literally had to start from scratch. From the moment she stepped back in the office, there was no support. And I remember on her first day back, I looked at her and I said, you and I are going to go for lunch. We're going to head out for lunch. And I just, because again, it was like, who's checking in? I knew that she'd stepped away from her baby because the baby was 9 months and it had gone to daycare because she had to go back to work for funds and everything else. And I just thought, God, this is such a tough time. Like, and it was a small business. So I, you know, I've got to sort of mention that, but where is the support, you know, for women, you know? And like you, Laura, I don't have children, right? But I'm thinking about it, and I don't know if it will be in my future or not. I haven't quite made up my mind, but you know, I think that I've got family all in the UK. So I know if I was to have a child, I would have to rely on daycare centers, obviously my husband and things, and he's from the UK as well. And this is big decision around, well, what does our life look like? But I also have the flex if I run my own business. Cut to somebody that's working in a corporation or for a small business. Like, these are decisions women are having to make because they still want their careers and they want to raise a family. And they're just, there doesn't seem to be the correct support network in place right now. What are your sort of friends sort of saying about this? Because I'm just hearing like a lot of women are actually having to go part-time or even dangerously drop out of the workforce, which is going to set us back decades if this keeps happening, to support their family because they can't afford to put two kids in daycare, or their work has got no flex, or they're now having to go back into the office 3-4 days a week. I know we're not going to come up with all the solutions right now, but what are you sort of seeing in the marketplace as well?
Yeah, look, I wish I had the solutions for that. I think the conversations I've had, I think the big takeaways have been around who's your supporter within the business? So I guess a bit like you were for Pam, who's that person that while you're on maternity leave knows that they've got your back? So if there's going to be these big decisions in the office, like who's firing your corner, even though you're not there? And I think, you know, that's not an easy one, but I think there's something in there just knowing that you've got a supporter, an advocate, and maybe that's where sponsorship comes back in as well. And then I think the other one comes back to flexibility, and flexibility is such a tough one because again, it means something so different to every business. But surely, like, I think, again, I heard lots of the similar stories, particularly from like sales or recruitment backgrounds where it's a quota and people don't think it can be part time. And we could probably record a whole episode on how wrong that is as well. But it's that, how are you setting people up for success? So what does return to work look like? Because it can't suddenly be 5 day full quota. Like, that's not setting up anyone for success. So, you know, what can we do as a business to support that? And yeah, I get it. Small businesses, it's harder, but it's not nothing. Like, we can all do something. And maybe a slightly more empathetic leadership. I really, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things where there isn't a answer. But I think in terms of how can we support each other, I think it's probably telling those stories again. So you don't think you're the only person going through that, and you're not the only person going, how on earth do I keep 2 children alive, work full time, have a great relationship, and tick all the other boxes we think we're supposed to be ticking in life? And then the other is, as leaders, whether that's as, you know, team leader or leader of a business, what are we doing to like set people up for success in whatever role and whatever capacity that is? What can we do? I don't believe any role has to be full time. Like, I just don't. I think it's all so dependent on people. So I think it's a lot more about, you know, that flex, or not flex, how do we get creative about roles in ways that we haven't been before? Like, I've read quite a lot on job shares, and again, had equal kind of stories of job shares that work and job shares that don't. But I feel like there has to be a little bit more creativity around some of this stuff and how we can enable people to return to work. Because I think you're right, lots of people end up opting out, or they end up not putting their hand up for leadership, and therefore this isn't going to get any better and we're not going to fix anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a really vulnerable time for women. That's sort of what I've heard as well. And they sort of maybe have lost their sense of identity. They're coming back into the workforce, and it's tough. And I think from a business point of view, the one thing that you can give your employees is trust. Just trust that the work's going to get done. Get out of their way and let them do their job. And if something does happen, or a ball does get dropped or something, then sure, have a conversation. But until such time, get out of people's way, let them do their jobs, let them work the hours that kind of they can do, right? And if that means they need between 3 and 5 kind of out because they've gone to pick their kids up or they're doing dinner or something, but then they log back on for an hour, like, let people just run their days. I think this is the key. It's like, we're all adults. And I think if more flexibility was given and more trust was given within businesses, you'd have a happier workforce, a more productive workforce. And you'd also be really supporting women to actually have a thriving home life and a thriving work life. And I do believe you can have both, but the businesses have got to make sure that they are setting the females up for success as well, and have those policies and procedures in place, and make sure everyone in the business, especially the leadership team, is aware that this is something that's important. Because I love it when I'm recruiting for businesses that say, we want to hire more women. And I'm like, cool, well, what, talk to me about your culture and blah, blah, blah. Oh, it's 4 days in office. I'm like, oh, right. Okay, excellent. What does those hours look like? Oh, 9 to 5. And I was like, right, is there any flex? Nope. And I'm like, well, good luck hiring females then, you know, or appealing to a certain type of woman that's got a family. It's just not going to happen. And we have choice now, right? So it's the companies that are providing these flexibilities, these hybrid ways of working, that are getting more diversity. So I think as a business owner, you need to look, or, you know, leaders in the business, what are we doing to support women? If you're serious about diversity and inclusion, these are the questions you need to be asking. But again, we could talk about this all day. So, but it's a really important topic. And I think that it's not getting spoken about enough. And yeah, I just want to know that if there's a woman out there listening to this, like, you know, if you're working for an organization that's not supportive, there's plenty of others out there that are. I want to talk about now the power of networking. This came up at a recent Sisterhood Social that we ran about the power of networking and building your network. In your own sort of experience, and you must have an amazing network now that you've obviously spoken to so many incredible women, how important do you think it is for us to build our network internally and externally within a business? And yeah, tell me about your own sort of journey of building your network since you've started Striven.
I'd say networking is the best thing you can do for your career. If I look at Striven and where I am, but even before that, it's really around the people that I know and the people I'm surrounded by. To exactly what we're saying before we started this, like, surround yourself with smarter people and people that are values driven and are great leaders and people you can learn from. and have honest and open conversations. Like I do have an incredible network because of Striving. And I'm incredibly fortunate for that. And even like go back to the, we've got 100 women now, we're creating a lunch club around those women so they can all meet each other as well. And I just don't think you should ever stop networking or ever undervalue what your network can bring, just in terms of learnings and opportunities. I think to your point as well, like people that are maybe in roles where they're not seeing the flexibility or support they need, talk to your network about it. You know, like that's where you can start to find support and maybe some answers and things that you don't have sat by yourself. I remember a couple of years ago reading a book called Never Eat Alone. And it's a little bit dry. So cliff notes, have lunch with somebody. So it's like every day you should be having lunch. Do that with somebody and learn something from it. So I put out on my LinkedIn that I was going to do 100 lunches with 100 strangers. I didn't do 100. I did 25. I should go back to it. But they would honestly, it were 25 people I didn't know that I had lunch with. And every single person was incredible. Mm. And I learned so much from every single one. And it was really going in with the like, no agenda. Like, let's just go and have a chat and see what we learn. And I feel like every single one I came out with, you know, huge lessons. And I just think the more you can do that and the more you can put yourself out of your comfort zone and the more people you can talk to, the more you'll learn and the better you'll become at whatever you're doing.
Hmm. I completely agree. And from your network now, Laura, like how do you keep fostering those relationships and deepening them? Do you have like, do you connect with them on LinkedIn? Do you like meet up with them a lot? Like how have you gone about sort of keeping those relationships going?
Yeah, great. Because I love connecting people. And as you know, like anytime I'm like, oh, I meet someone, I'm like, you should speak to so-and-so. So I'm very good at just being kind of keeping people at the top of mind and who should connect with mm-hmm. who. So I think that's one, because I think it really is about how you can add value, kind of just approach everything. It's like, how can I add value or how can I do something good here? And then the other one, so we are trialing lunch club. So each month, the Women in Leaders group are going to catch up in Sydney and Melbourne with no agenda, but like, let's all just go and have lunch together. So I think it's really those peer-to-peer connections that you can facilitate for that in-person time. Like I say, I just approach everything in life and like, how can I add value and how can I leave this better than it was, better than I found it? And that's just kind of how I approach work and life. I also just really like people. Go back to like, I was never particularly book smart, but I'll happily talk to anyone. I think that's a big reason I am where I am.
I love it. And I think you and I have got very similar similarities there for sure. Cause I'm a big people lover, which is probably why I'm in recruitment, because I love people. But look, what is next for you, Laura? Like what's happening? Like where would, like if I get you back on this podcast in say a couple of years time, what would you love to have achieved? Like what are you sort of working on right now?
Yeah. So I think if we talk about Women in Leadership book, it's really around, you know, how do we keep publicizing that rather than it just being like a, you know, a big thing we do. So we're looking at what a year's worth of kind of activity looks like for that. All the money from the book as well also goes to charity. So just kind of doing our bit there as well. I think everyone's already talking about what does next year's book look like. There might be a TBC on that one. I'd love to think that it's something we could do regularly, but it did take a solid 3 months. So we might have to come back to that. And then I think from a Striving perspective, it's like I say, we're really just focused on building community this year. And that'll be within HR, TA, P&C, marketing, customer success and sales. And really just how do we facilitate more peer-to-peer connection and just bring more people together so they can tell, you know, they can share stories and they can help each other out. And how can we do that? So if we can still be doing that in 2 years' time and have helped a lot more people, then I'd be pretty happy with that as an outcome.
Amazing. I have no doubt that you won't achieve it. And look, I'm coming at it from women in tech. You're coming at it from women in marketing, HR and sales. So who knows? I'm sure our paths are going to cross a lot over these next sort of couple of years. And I just want to support in whatever way I can what you're doing, because the more people are elevating female voices, getting more women into leadership roles, the better. So where can I send people to find out more about you? I'll obviously make sure I drop the book link below when we launch this podcast. But where do you hang out the most?
Yeah. So personally, I'm always on LinkedIn. So if anybody wants to message me, I'm always up for a chat, as mentioned. Then it's striving.io if anybody wants to check that out. And then I'll send you that. The book is for sale on Amazon at the moment as well. So a few different links there.
I'll make sure that they are all in the show notes below. Laura, amazing chatting with you today. Thank you so much. And I look forward to having you back on in a couple of years' time and hearing more about what Striving's doing. But thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.